everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. It's a little bit different this time. Usually I start the program with the message of the week from Sheldon Neidl, but he's notified people that he's moving this week, and he does hope to continue again with the next message next week. It's rather a shame, really, because I think a lot of us were waiting to see what the Galactic Federation might have had to say about the business in the Middle East between Israel and Lebanon. So what I will do instead is start with the general news and then go on to UFOs and similar subjects, of which I have probably a little bit more than usual. So I think we'll have an interesting program. I'd like to start with a report that came through from Saoirse Fahl. That comes off a website called whatdoesitmean.com. And it was published on the 17th of July. And it relates to information from a Russian military analysis and FSB sources who are reporting at that time that the US military special forces had seized control of the Nation of Israel's nuclear complex located at Dimona with a contingent of their special forces troops from the American war zone currently located in Iraq. And it is said that these reports detail that this action by the American military leadership was in direct response to China's President Hu's threat to the American president that should the Strait of Hormuz be blocked by Iran due to the escalating crisis between Israel and its Muslim neighbors, China would consider that action as a declaration of war against the Chinese people. Apparently, the American response to this threat from the Chinese, coming from President Hu in his face-to-face meeting with the United States President Bush at the G8 summit, was to assure both China's President Hu and Russia's President Putin that the American military leadership would secure Israel's nuclear weapons and limit their, that is Israel's, incursion into Lebanon. Now, considering that report came through about 10 days ago, or just over, it makes you wonder whether there is a marked line where Israel has been told to go so far and no further. But I think what it does seem to indicate is something that we probably have known or suspected for a long time, and that is both the US and Israel tend to work together on these matters. There's a final comment on this report that says, in return for the American military leadership securing Israel's nuclear weapons, both President Putin and President Hu have allowed a 72-hour window for Israel to secure its northern border with Lebanon, with the understanding that Israel will not attack either Syria or Iran, and whom Israel has blamed for being the instigators behind this current war. Now, that again is interesting because I repeat that this message was published on the 17th of July, and there they were talking about allowing a three-day window for Israel to secure its northern border. And that, of course, would have taken it up to the 20th of July, which was many days ago, so no doubt a few more things have happened behind the scene. Moving on to another article that came around the email sites about the war, which came through Carl Schwartz of, an email address, which would be of no consequence in that case, but he evidently has members that he sends his emails to, and he rightly says that if any topic is dominating the news right now, and this was circulated today, it has to be this latest Gaza-Lebanon escapade by the Bush White House, and he doesn't mince his words, and he says, and those thugs over in Tel Aviv that call themselves a government too. He says that one Arabic man was saying that Israel could attack and attempt to terrorize all they wish. The Arabs will not back down and are not afraid of them. Carl Schwartz questioned, how did this latest round of fighting get started? And he said, it seems the Israeli soldiers were not captured or apprehended or arrested in Israel, so there was no cross-border incursion to call it an act of war. But the Zionists in Tel Aviv did just that, attacked, and Bush and Condoleezza Rice are backing them all the way in the face of the odds and the stupid build-up. They are providing more DU weapons to make sure they really pollute the place and commit more war crimes. And so the report goes on. And I was just interested in his comments, the different ways that people see what is happening there. There is yet another report that's been going around that comes from the result of the July 22nd meeting of the Cosmic Council. Now, this was St. Germain and Christ Michael. And the reason I've included it in the general news is because it does relate to what is happening in the Middle East. So I will read these following extracts from a message that was signed off as St. Germain and Christ Michael. And I think they came out over the 2 days of the 25th and 26th of July. Now, the first statement said, I wish to announce there will be a change in the government in the United States of America and the beginning of the Nasara program this week. So this week means we've got a couple of days left to see that manifest, if, of course, that information is reliable. It goes on to say that this is one of the steps of the plan from the July 22nd meeting of the Cosmic Council and is being implemented now. We're going to stop the Middle East war galactic style in the manner described by Anne Bellringer. Now, you may or may not know that Anne Bellringer is, I believe I'm correct in saying, Patrick Bellringer's wife, and she, like him, also channels. Now, I have seen that message, and basically what he's referring to there is that the war will be stopped using the technology of the ETs, and they can literally disable any weaponry, even coming to the point of melting or softening up anything that's made of metal. So again, there is a clear statement on two matters there. It also goes on to say that despite what you will see and hear in your bought and paid for media, real or made up from file footage, this is the last war by the cabal. It will be small and short. And the extract finally goes on to say that with regard to immediate intercessions in the Middle East, we will have two levels of involvement, dealing with the attacks and destruction on the ground, which will be overseen by Admiral Jonker, and interactions with the instigators themselves. The latter is under the guidance of Mon Johnson. Now, those two names, to the best of my knowledge, relate to other people that also contact the channelers and send their separate messages through. So I thought that was worth mentioning. I'm a little bit dubious about it myself, but it's only fair to mention it because we're obviously all going to hope that it is in fact going to happen. We would be delighted. Now, next item I have here comes from Christopher Story. He's the editor of the International Currency Review, and he's on worldreports.org. This article came onto the email on the 25th of July, so it's quite recent, and it's referring to London, 24th of July, 2006. And the writer is saying that in a further twist to the global crisis surrounding the sabotaging of the Wanta plan. Apparently, Christopher Story's earlier reports covered what that was. It reads that it has transpired that the President of the United States personally ordered the funds earmarked for Ambassador Leo Wanta, that is the Ameritrust Group, Inc., to be frozen. It is understood that the parallel so-called Bretton Woods settlement involving funds due to 37 countries were also frozen at the same time. The order for the funds to be frozen was issued by President George Bush Jr. while he was en route to the G8 summit meeting in St. Petersburg in mid-July. Now it reads that the Federal Reserve, which is a private organisation owned mainly by foreigners, is believed to have instructed the Bank of America, Richmond, VA, where the funds are located and held in the name of Leo Wanta of the Ameritrust Group, Inc., not to credit them to an existing account for access by the trustor and owner of the funds, Leo Wanta, and his trading corporation. Now, you have to listen to this. The funds accumulated for the Wanta plan, amounting to $4.5 trillion, were assembled in May and June this year, pursuant to the accord between Leo Wanta, that is Ameritrust Group, Inc., and the U.S. Treasury and other key parties approved in principle in November 2005 and signed in December. Now, it tells you here that the funds belong to the trustor and his trading corporation and are not the property of the Bank of America, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, or any other party. And the agreement was reached after the veteran Treasury Secret Service agent, Leo Wanta, surfaced last year, having been falsely pronounced by the CIA to be dead. Now, Ambassador Wanta was illegally incarcerated, scammed, and held under house arrest for many years after having refused demands by Presidents George H.W. Bush Sr. and William Jefferson Clinton for funds to be diverted for their personal benefit, and after identifying the wrongful diversion of $1 billion into an account for Pilgrim Investments, which belongs to George Bush, and this took place in August 1989. Now, what makes this real news, and it reads, the reappearance of this upright Treasury, Secret Service, financial agent, after years of absence, after the CIA had lied for years that he was dead, delivered a high-voltage electric shock to the criminal gangs operating deep inside the U.S. structures. These are led by arrogant and powerful intelligence barons and their compromised intelligence, banking and legal associates. And such people now understandably fear that they are all going to be exposed, arrested and indicted for their serial corruption over the years. So there's something rather amazing that's sort of ready to explode on the scene like many other things. But the amount of money involved there is really staggering. Now, I have another message here which came through Lauren. This was Sananda on the 26th of July. And what they're basically saying in the message is that they are about to intervene on the behalf of all light workers everywhere. So I thought, well, that's sort of worth putting in the general news rather than the other messages, which I usually refer to as being somewhat more of a spiritual nature. Anyway, this one says that we, the hierarchy, are about to intervene on behalf of all light workers everywhere. This has been decreed by the high councils, and it is in their jurisdiction to see this through. Within moments of your time, life will become a confusing place to be on earth. The wall has been pulled over your eyes for so long that the truth will seem unrecognizable and foreign. He goes on to say, in the next moments of your reality, you will see and be exposed to things that will be disheartening. In best cases, the truth of your present regime and world leaders will come in the form of a shock. It says we are doing our best to ensure the laws of your current government system are followed. This will assist in keeping some semblance of normalcy for those who are unprepared. we have been granted permission to intervene, and this means in any way that we deem necessary. What lies before you now will determine your path to the source of all that is. It will be a formidable course that each of you will embark on, yet it will be filled with joy and love. It will be the time that you have all prepared for, and will be the moment of, in the history of your planet when all come together under one God. We are so eager to join with you in the new galactic society you are preparing to create, and you will be amazed at the most wondrous tasks that each of you will be asked to perform. Each of you holds an aspect of Creator that came here to be actualized. It is in this way that you will be creating the new Earth. Each of you holds an energetic imprint that is valuable to the function of the whole. Your specific DNA was encoded for this particular time on Earth. That's all I'm going to read from that message. I mean, you can find that lady and her source of messages if you want to read the whole thing. I see that in total I haven't got them all. That message was, the way it was laid out, about 6 pages long. Well, I suspect if it had been made in compact paragraphs and spread across the page, it probably would have been about 3. Now, here is a message from yesterday, well, it came round yesterday anyway, from Ray Ramsey from the what he calls the Celestial Meeting. And the Celestial Meeting was headed as the time has come. Now it reads that towards the end of talking, Tananda, St. German, Admiral Junker and Christmaster assembled their plans with occasional input from others and final blessings from the emissaries. Now you'll notice the name has come up again, Admiral Junker, so these different names are channeling apparently from within one group by the sound of them. Anyway, the message reads that the basic plan is to immediately implement the steps of the changeover, starting with the change of government and the change in the economic system. All procedures and personnel are in place. Many of the operations are quietly going forward, though mostly not seen till the final moments. To radically increase divine intervention with the conflicting parties, visible and hidden, this will include the use of galactic technology to decrease the effectiveness of battles or render weapons non-functional or non-existent. Use of transport devices to remove important people from harm's way, or shift attackers to another location miles distant, and uncloaked ships, that means invisible, hovering nearby doing nothing but being present. Now, here's an interesting one that I've never heard before. Same message, it reads on that Federation soldiers would appear on the ground, both in local uniforms and their own. Command meetings will have an extra member involved in arguing. Recalcitrant leaders may suddenly find themselves in a conference room on board a starship with several beings much taller than they sitting there frowning at them. And it goes on to mention Mother Earth saying Gaia herself was there in the form of a created light body through which to speak and listen in the assemblage. She was eloquent and passionate about the damage to her planetary body and the unhappiness of the being she was carrying. She admired the vast increase in the light among mankind and thanked the emissaries and their instrument, the Galactic Federation, for their response to her cry for help, to her body and to mankind and other kind. Now, that was a short message in the first place, but those are the parts that I thought were interesting. Again, some of these messages lately are pretty definite in what they're going to do here. And as you recall at the beginning, they're talking about the change of government, changes in the economic system and so forth. And I think what he said there very much mirrors what has also come through over the weeks and months through the Galactic Federation via Sheldon Nigel. Now, the last bit of what I call general news again has circulated on the web a couple of days ago. And I'm looking to see who it's come through, and I can't actually see the name, but I guess this is some sort of channeling. and it reads that we will submit legislation to the United States Senate, which will authorize the Congress to undertake judicial review of those signing statements with the view to having the President's acts declared unconstitutional. Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter said on the Senate floor. Well, there you go. I was wrong thinking it was channeling. Oh, I'll read the first paragraph, and there it is. They're all alive and well on the earth. Now, Specter's announcement came the day that an American Bar Association task force concluded that by attaching conditions to legislation, the President has sidestepped his constitutional duty to either sign a bill, veto it, or take no action. Now, it reads that Specter's announcement intensifies his challenge of the administration's use of executive power on a number of policy matters, and of particular interest to him are the two signing statements challenging the provisions of the USA Patriot Act renewal, which he wrote, and legislation banning the use of torture on detainees. It finishes with a short footnote saying that Bush is not without congressional allies on the matter, and that Senator John Cornyn, a former judge, has said that signing statements are nothing more than expressions of presidential opinion that carry no legal weight because federal courts are unlikely to consider them when deciding cases that challenge the same laws. I thought that last bit, the way I read it, seemed to sound as though they were not allies to Bush on that, but speaking the same sort of language as Specter, but maybe I've misunderstood that. Now, I've got a few items here in what I call my UFO file. I do have some UFO bits, but other information all revolves around space and things of that nature. So what I will start off with is an older report, as I tend to do, which has come out of the Flying Saucer Review from 1968. It's a wonderful period of time, and the Flying Saucer Review was an excellent magazine at that time. They picked up some excellent reports. Now, this one is a little bit different, and you don't hear of this too often, and that's talking about teleportation. And this was involving a man called, where's his name, Gerardo. He's a doctor, in fact, an attorney named Dr. Gerardo Vidal, who went with his wife to a family reunion in the town of Chascomús, distant less than 120 kilometres southwards from the capital, Buenos Aires, and that was in May 1968. Now, it reads that leaving the party a little before midnight, they decided to drive on to Maipú, a town some 150 kilometres to the south of Chascomús, where they have relatives and friends. They went by a national route, and ahead of them in another car went another married couple who also had relatives living in Maipú. Now, this other couple, whose names are not known, arrived safely without incident, but not so the Vidals, whose failure to arrive caused concern. The other couple therefore set out again by car along the highway back to Chascomús, hoping to find them, but had no success, and returned again to Maipú, having found no trace of either the car or its occupants. Now, some 48 hours after the disappearance of the Vidals, in the residence of the Rapalini family in Maipú, a telephone call was received from the Argentine consulate in Mexico City. Now, that was 6,400 kilometres away. And in this phone call, Dr. Gerardo Vidal informed them that all was well, and told them of the exact date of the proposed arrival of himself and his wife at Azusa International Airport, Buenos Aires. And in due course, the Vidals both arrived, as notified, and were met by their friends and relatives. Now, Senora Vidal was taken straight from the Azusa Airport to a private clinic for treatment of a nervous disorder. Meanwhile, Dr. Vidal told his amazed family of the astonishing thing that had befallen them both. Dr. Vidal said that as they were leaving the suburbs of Chacomis on the night of their disappearance, a dense fog had suddenly appeared in front of them. And from that moment onwards, they had been unable to account for 48 hours in their lives. When they came to again, it was daytime, and the car with them, still inside, was parked in an unknown lane. Both of them were unhurt, but both had a pain in the back of the neck, and both had the sensation of having slept for many hours. Astonished, they got out of the car and found that its surface was burnt, as though by a blowtorch. The engine, however, was in perfect running order. So driving along an unknown road in unfamiliar scenery, they met people and inquired where they were. And always the answer was the same, in Mexico. Their watches had stopped, but with the aid of a calendar, they established they had been away from Argentina for 48 hours. Wonderful, isn't it? Now, it said in due course they arrived at the Argentine consulate in Mexico City, where they made themselves known, and from there they put a call to their family at Rapalina in Maipú in the province of Buenos Aires. And the Argentine consul asked them to preserve total silence about the case until the authorities had time to make a thorough investigation. Now, Dr. Vidal's car, Peugeot 403, was sent off to the United States for scientific study, and it was arranged that he would receive another car of the same make in replacement of him. Now, it says, highly significant is the fact that on this case, as upon so many others, the odious curtain of silence soon descended. And thus, 2 days later, the notary public, Martin Rapalini in Maipú, was telling newspaper reporters that the alleged telephone call from Mexico City had never occurred, and assuring him that he and his family had no knowledge whatsoever of the Vidals. But he committed 3 glaring errors, because, in fact, the Rapalini family is related to the Vidals. First, his own sister, who lives in General Piran, another town in Buenos Aires province, not far from Maipú, is related to Dr. Vidal's wife. And secondly, another sister of his had already told friends about the telephone call. And thirdly, an aunt of the notary had already confirmed, before well-known witnesses, the story of Vidal's teleportation to Mexico. So it says that finally the newspapermen did not fail to notice another odd but significant point. Almost all of the notary's relatives had suddenly slipped away from Maipú, evidently in order to avoid further questioning. Do we wonder there whether they had been threatened? I thought that was something that had occurred in more recent times, but there we are, 1968. People were being told to keep quiet about these things. Now, that's almost the end of the report, and it only makes conclusions here, saying that on the very same night when the Vidals mysteriously vanished, a man was received into the Maipú Hospital for medical treatment. And this man said he was driving along on National Route number 2. A strange fog appeared in front of him, but that it had shortly afterwards lifted and moved away, leaving him badly shaken and feeling unwell. The case of the Vidals presents many details that were reported in the account of the experience of Barney and Betty Hill. And that took place some years earlier, in September 1961. Now, Dr. Vidal said the surface of his car had strange marks, as though it had been burnt by a blowtorch. The Hills also noted mysterious shiny circles on the boot of their car. The Vidal's watches had stopped, and this also happened with the Hills. And the Vidals knew nothing of what had happened to them during their lost 48 hours. And the writer here in the magazine suggests that under psychotherapy and time regression hypnosis, it would be possible to learn what happened to them once their minds are repressed. And that was, of course, done in the case of the Betty and Barney Hill incident. So it's a shame, having heard that much about him, because I don't think that happens very often, that we don't know whether or not in the course of time these people were even prepared to submit to regression to find out what actually happened. So it sort of whets your appetite, but we can't go any further with that one. Now, on the web, there is an English translation site for Pravda, which of course is Russian, and it is english.pravda.ru. There's a very interesting article on there that someone circulated, and it's talking about cities found on the moon. Now, speaking for myself, that's not the first time I've heard of it. Many years ago, someone analysed, I think, hundreds, if not perhaps even thousands, of NASA's photographs of the moon, and they found so many anomalies that you, with an open mind, you could quite accept that there was evidence of life on the moon, or that there had been life. So again, this was interesting. So I'll tell you, or read out, some of the bits that are referred to. The writer says that we still come across publications trying to find an answer to the following question: are we alone in the universe? At the same time, the presence of reasoning beings has been detected close to our home on the moon. However, this discovery was immediately classified as secret, as it is so incredible that it even might shake the already existing social principles. And that was as reported by the Russian newspaper, the Chernyi Volgograd. Now, it said, here is an extract from the official press release, and it reads that NASA scientists and engineers participating in exploration of Mars and Moon reported the results of their discoveries at a briefing at the Washington National Press Club on March the 21st, 1996. It was announced for the first time that man-made structures and objects had been discovered on the Moon. The scientists spoke rather cautiously and evasively about these objects, with the exception of a UFO. They always mentioned that the man-made objects are possible and stated the information was still under study and official results will be published later. It was mentioned at the briefing as well that the Soviet Union used to own some photo materials proving the presence of such activity on the moon. And although it wasn't identified what kind of activity it was, thousands of photo and video materials from the Apollos and the Clementine Space Station showed many parts on the lunar surface where this activity and its traces were perfectly evident. Video films and photos were made by US astronauts during the Apollo program, and they were demonstrated at this briefing. People were extremely surprised why the materials hadn't been presented to the public earlier. And NASA specialist answered it was difficult to forecast the reaction of people to information that some creatures had been or are still on the moon. In addition, there were some other reasons to it which were beyond the control of NASA. Now, specialist for lunar studies, Richard Hoagland, says that NASA is still trying to alter photo materials before they are published in public catalogues and files. They do some retouching or are partially refocusing them while copying. And some investigators, and Hoagland is among them, suppose that an extraterrestrial race has used the moon as a terminal station during their activity on Earth. And these suggestions are confirmed by the legends and myths of different nations of our planet. The ruins of lunar cities stretch for many kilometres. Huge domes or massive basements, numerous tunnels and other constructions cause scientists to reconsider their opinions concerning the moon. How the moon appeared and principles of its revolving around the Earth still pose a great problem for scientists. Now, it says that some partially destroyed objects on the lunar surface can't be placed among natural geological formations, as they are of complex organisation and geometrical structure. In the upper part of Rima Hadley, not far from the place where the Apollo 15 had landed, a construction surrounded by a tall, D-shaped wall was discovered. As of now, different artifacts have been discovered in 44 regions. And the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center and the Houston Planetary Institute are investigating the region. And it reads on, the mysterious terrace-shaped excavations of rock have been discovered near the Tycho crater, and the concentric hexahedral excavations and the tunnel entry on the terrace side can't be the result of natural geological processes. Instead, they look very much like open cast slime. A transparent dome raised above the crater edge was discovered near the crater Copernicus, and the dome is unusual as it glows white and blue from inside. A rather unusual object, which is unusual indeed even for the moon, was discovered in the upper part of the factory area. A disc of about 50 metres in diameter stands on a square basement surrounded with walls. In the picture, close to the ROM, we can also see a dark round embrasure in the ground, which resembles an entry to an underground Caponia. There is a rectangular area between factory and the crater Copernicus, which is 300 metres wide and 400 metres long. And apparently Apollo 10 astronauts took a photo of a 1 mile long object, which they call Castle, which is at the height of 14 kilometres and casts a distinct shadow on the lunar surface. And that this object seems to consist of several cylindrical units and a large conjunctive unit. And the internal porous structure of the Castle is clearly seen in one of the pictures, which gives the impression that some parts of the object are transparent. Now, the report goes on a wee bit more, but you can always look on that site if you want to know the full story. It mentions that Richard Hoagland had requested originals of the Castle pictures for the second time, and no pictures were found at all, and apparently they disappeared even from the list of pictures made by the Apollo 10 crew. And the only intermediate pictures of the object were found in the archives, which unfortunately don't depict the internal structure of the object. So you see, all along, they try to hide these things up, try to keep them from you. And on another link to this site, I actually saw some of the photographs that had been altered. In that case, they were of Mars. And there were definitely some there that were deliberately put out of focus so that you couldn't see the detail. Also, some of the colours were altered. In real colour, apparently Mars looks very much like the Earth with a blue sky. But for some reason, because we, I suppose, historically called it the Red Planet, they have coloured all the ground and the ground debris in a reddish-brown colour. So there we are. There's enough there to whet the appetite. And I'll just mention one final thing before I conclude there. I did say that a mission control specialist who was looking at some of the photos that revealed regular geometry of square and rectangular constructions, that our guys observed ruins of the lunar cities, transparent pyramids, domes, and God knows what else, which are currently hidden deep inside the NASA safe, and felt like Robinson Crusoe when he suddenly came across prints of bare feet on the sand of the desert island. And he says, what do geologists and scientists say after studying the pictures of lunar cities and other anomalous objects? They say that such objects can't be natural formations. We should admit they are artificial, especially the domes and pyramids. And it concludes that reasonable activity of an alien civilization showed up unexpectedly close to us. We were not ready for it psychologically, and some people hardly believe they are true even now. But there we are. Lots of information there. Doesn't actually say which side of the moon it was on. I gather that there's more activity on the side that's turned away from us, and that our space probes have been warned off of doing anything on that side because people are still active there. There we are, that's an interesting thing. Now, if you like the mysterious, and you follow the different things that come up all of a sudden on the web, you must have heard of the Wingmakers, which relates to a cave, an unusual cave in fact, which was stumbled upon in the summer of 1996, by two hikers. They were students apparently, and they were in northern New Mexico near an ancient archaeological site. And through a chain of mysterious events, they found artifacts that ended up in the hands of AC-10, an ultra-secret, unacknowledged department of the National Security Agency, which is responsible for reverse engineering recovered extraterrestrial technologies. Now, the artifact they found, which they don't mention at this stage, became known as the Compass, and it was quickly determined to be of an extraterrestrial origin, and its purpose is eventually construed to be a homing device. And that led them to assume it is not an isolated artifact randomly discovered, but perhaps part of a larger configuration of artifacts possibly leading to a spacecraft. So an exploratory team from AC-10 was dispatched to the discovery site of the Compass artifact, where it was confirmed that it was a homing device, and it led the team to an intricately designed structure carved deep inside a canyon wall. Now, apparently a corridor spirals up through the rock with 23 chambers jutting out at 10-meter intervals, and this amazing discovery is initially thought to be an extraterrestrial time capsule left behind by an alien race, and each chamber contains animatic and an impenetrable wall, and in the uppermost chamber the scientists uncover an optical disc presumably holding the information about the site's creators and their purpose. Now, this team, AC-10, which was led by Dr. Jameson Naruda, finally succeeded, and they determined that the creators of the site call themselves Wingmakers. So that's how the name came about. Now, apparently over 8,000 pages of philosophy, poetry, music, genetics, subdimensional equations, and cosmology are contained within the disc. And the Wingmakers are thought to be representatives of the central race, the most ancient race of beings in the universe, and the legendary creator gods of all life of all the other galaxies, and they are the genetic caretakers of the universe, once thought to be gods when they interacted with the human race in eons past. Now, it appears that thousands of years earlier, where the Earth's distant future, the Wingmakers constructed and left behind lots of artifacts in these various chambers, and they did this on seven continents, and the New Mexico site was the first of the seven to be discovered, and they reckon that these sites are linked together through some mysterious means, and the information contained within the sites is for an uncertain purpose at this stage. Now, the Wingmaker's story chronicles the hero's journey of Dr. Naruda and one of his associates, Samantha Folden, because they gradually became sympathisers of the Wingmaker's purpose and wanted to make the ancient arrow material available to the broader scientific community. And the leadership of AC-10 were at odds at making such a disclosure, fearing that their agenda and hidden power would vanish as a result. So given no other options, and with some danger to himself, Dr. Naruda defected from the AC-10, taking some materials from the ancient arrow site with him. Now, it says that the AC-10, with all of its incredible technology and brilliant minds, makes every effort to capture Naruda, but with the help of a journalist, he manages to outwit the grasp of the AC-10 and uncover the true purpose of Wingmaker site. And he says, to repel an ancient enemy of the Wingmakers, and in the year 2011, a synthetic soulless race of aliens known as, and the name is omitted, are foreseen by the Wingmakers to detect Earth. And they say that the Wingmakers, I suppose in anticipation of this, have stored requisite knowledge inside the seven sites to help humanity prevent the forceful Animus invasion. Oh, there we are, we have the name now, they're called the Animus. And Dr. Naruda believes he must uncover this knowledge ahead of the AC-10 and share it with the world scientific community before the AC-10 can capture him and hide or destroy the Wingmaker site. And most importantly, all of this must be in time to repel the Animus from Earth. Now, the date there is interesting. because he's talking about the year 2011, when it appears that this race, the Animus, would attempt to make some contact with us. But it's strange how all these dates are coming together, because as you'll probably be aware, the end time, as per the Mayan calendar, is given for the 21st of December 2012, and the ascension that is spoken of by Sheldon Idles, ETs, and many other channels, including my own, talk of this being the final act in the end times. So it's very difficult to see, once first contact has been made, that yet another group of beings could be entertained. But there we are. That's quite interesting. There is, and I don't know the website address just off the cuff, another site where you can actually read a series of interviews that were given by Dr. Neruda to some lady. That may well indeed be the one who was mentioned in this particular report. And he gave her a lot of information in response to her inquiries. And it's well worth reading, because whether you just have curiosity or whether you like to try and take some of the spiritual meaning from it, it's an extremely interesting one. Indeed, yes. Anyway, I'm not going to read the rest of it. It's 4 pages of that. But that's, I think that's enough for the moment. And time is racing by, as it always does. I seem to get to the end of this far too early. Now, something happened when I was looking for some scrap paper. I keep a pile of it. I print my emails on it and that type of thing, as long as it's got one clean side. And I picked another pile out as I was getting low, and I couldn't help noticing the information that was originally on it. And at that time, I used to get the, bi-weekly newsletter called Centre of Attention. It was very good. It was done by Jason Dunlap, and he used to have the Sheldon Idle updates on there and lots of other information. It was very informative in its time. And on this particular, a couple of pages I've got, this was relating to September the 28th, 1996. And at that time, they were expecting that a contact and a landing was imminent. So Sheldon Idle was passing on the information about the different groups of ETs and the sort of things that would happen. And I thought, just looking back, it's very interesting, although obviously that event didn't come off, because one has to assume that to some extent what was planned then is still in the plan now. So I wanted to read some of it out because it makes very interesting reading. So this is a Sheldon Idle update, and he was talking about the various ships and the types. And he said, from Andromeda we have the Sombrero, that is in shape, powered by 5 crystals that actually use the pilot's energy field to power the ship. And this is a small scout craft that carries 3 people. The Andromedans also sport the cigar-shaped utility mothership that holds 5,000 to 10,000 people and measures, get this, 5 miles long. And the real motherships are about 100 miles long. Staggering, isn't it? Anyway, he goes on to say, the Arcturians will have supply ships that look like 2 Watlids welded together. The motherships are huge. The scout ships look somewhat like a cowboy hat with a soccer ball inside. Yes, I've never seen photographs of those. And all their ships land on struts and are exited through the bottom by way of the force field. Apparently, you just jump through the hole and the force field lowers you gently. Jason says on here, kind of like the fireman's pole without the pole. That's a good description, isn't it? He says that the Palladians have several different ships, the beam ships, atmospheric ships and others. Well, of course, there are some wonderful photographs around of the Palladian ships, and I can picture them in my mind as they are described. He says the Syrians have 100-foot diameter spherical scout ships and a Merkaba ship that looks like two four-sided pyramids on top of each other. And then there are the triangle-shaped defense ships that look a lot like the, he says, Kitty Surprise food bits I used to give my cat. So maybe some of you in the States will recognize that shape. But presumably it simply means they are triangular. Now, Sheldon, he said, imparts not only details of what the ships look inside and out, but what the Syrian commanders, angels, etc., are thinking and planning. And he says that he asked Sheldon when the big event would take place, and it was supposed to occur within a matter of months. And they thought even then that the date may fluctuate, but little did they realise it still wouldn't have happened 10 years later. And he goes on to talk about events that would take place. For example, that there would be a flyover of UFOs in formation over all major cities in the Northern Hemisphere and also in the Southern Hemisphere. And he said the way Sheldon explains it, these flyovers will steadily increase. Once they start, until every major city in the world could be having flyovers simultaneously. He says, meanwhile, representatives of the Galactic Federation have met and are still meeting many people within the US government and powerful people within the secret government and secret societies in order to convince them to reveal the truth of society and agree not to attack or in any way cause an unfortunate incident. But he said they won't though. Apparently most of it has fallen on deaf ears. All they seem to hear is resistance is futile and some are willing to kill us all if necessary, but that should not surprise anyone. I think the point is that resistance actually is futile and the Galactic Federation has made sure of it. He says when the mass landings begin, 15.5 million ships will descend and land in a matter of only several hours. And Sheldon went on to say that all these contact teams were divided up into groups and they would meet with humans in different parts of the world. And different parts were allocated to different ETs. The Pleiadians and those from the Pegasus constellation were going to cover the Americas, Europe and Asia. And the Syrians were going to land in Africa and Polynesia, and the Cassiopeians were going to land in New Zealand and Africa. And he says, just before the landings take place, the Federation ships will temporarily shut off all military aircraft, totally neutralise all bombs, nukes, ships and technological weaponry, regardless of its sophistication. And furthermore, all mechanical devices, cars, machines, appliances, even guns, will become frozen tight and inoperable. And so it goes on. It's very interesting. But can you see in that something being reflected today in the messages that I read out at the start? Because they're talking, are they not, of bringing an end to the war, etc., etc., doing something that sounds, I would think, very similar to what has been expressed there. Now, I come on to what I call the sort of out-and-out spiritual stuff. croaking a bit now. And I'll start off with reading from one of my own messages. There was one from Saint Germain on the 20th of July. I get used to them, I suppose, and once I've done them, I don't know whether they strike me as strongly as I did when I first sort of read them. But this one from St. Germain is encouraging positive actions and asking us, or telling us that we've been able to keep pressure upon those who support the dark forces. And he said, we're not put off by their rhetoric and false statements, and certainly we cannot be deterred from our path because we know it is true and worthwhile. They said this is one situation the dark cannot buy their way out of, although they think nothing of massive bribery and corruption to achieve their aims, indeed. He said that people now are much more informed and interested in worldly affairs, and they are also wiser to the methods of the dark are not so easily fooled. And he said, however, their compatriots sit at the head of almost every country, and there is an attempt to bring all under global control. But in spite of how it appears, this is not easy, even for the vast power of the controlling Illuminati families, because behind the scenes, we, and that is Saint Germain and the Brotherhood and the ETs, are laying the foundation for major changes. And it shall start with the keystone to our plan, that of introducing a new financial system that is based on precious metals. So, even if not by name, Massara lives on. And indeed, that does crop up quite often in other channeling. I think one would safely accept that that is definitely going to happen. And of course, the rich families are going to have their ill-gotten gains removed, and then there will be a fair distribution of all the monies in the world, along with the additional which is being supplied by the powers that be. And I think that's through the form of precious metals, of course. Now, Saint Germain said that the light has settled upon the earth and grows day by day, and through that it touches the hearts of more and more people. And he believes there is a new confidence that has come into being since the millennium. And he says it's as if someone switched a path to a new track. And that was indeed the case, as humanity signalled its readiness to rise up and attracted the support it needed to be successful. And through the spiritual hierarchy, great councils convened a meeting, and it was decided that man should be given the opportunity to show that the light could bloom on earth. It was decided also that the decision had proved to be wise, and in a relatively short time that we had responded well to the new energies. In a way of comforting us, he said that the dark have no answer to the light and can only continue their fear tactics, hoping to halt progress, and that the inevitable will happen and events are about to occur that are beyond their control. And so the message goes on and covers those aspects. It's talking about how movements are taking place now to restore people's rights as written into the Constitution, and reminding us that these were not man's laws but God-given through man to ensure people's freedom. So, yeah, very comforting message and very warming and helpful. Now, as time flies by, I haven't got too much time left, but I believe I can get through this message, which came from Myra on June the 1st this year. It came through Valerie Donner, who, in my opinion, is a very good channeler, and it came from the Pleiadian High Council, and it reads, I come to you today with much to share. We are waiting our future connections with you. That will be in person. We will be at your beck and call. That means we have been planning our time together so that we will be of the utmost assistance. We are excited about this reunion and about the impact our presence will have upon Earth. Had it not been for you, the light workers, we would continue to be delayed in our arrival. You have paved the way for our coming with love and light energy. Your focus on the light and on healing yourselves and the earth is what is making this possible. The stage is being set for our arrival. When we say it will be soon in our time, we mean soon. In your time, it could be a little while longer. Preparations are being made. You are being served in matters of time due to the higher frequencies coming to earth. The fourth dimensional and fifth dimensional energies remind you that time is moving quickly into the ever-present now. Please be patient a little longer. In your fields of consciousness, you are ready for us. Your governments want to keep us away, but this will not work. We will be coming at the request of our Creator. The future growth and healing of all life on your planet is not in the hands of your governments or those who have been in control. Our presence will be like a homecoming for you. Many of you have Pleiadian roots. You possess our DNA. You participated with us in the formative stages of your planet and during other times as well. It has been a very long time since we and others from other planets will be coming on that. There will be new technologies that we will pass on to you. Many gifts will be at your fingertips. out a mutual exchange, for we have many things to learn from you. You as light workers will be teaching the myriads of humans who will just be beginning their spiritual path. They will need you and what you know. You will show them the way. Your encrypted ways of being on the earth will leave. In exchange for this, you will have direct communications and truth. You will master the knowingness levels rather quickly. It is your inner knowing that will present itself to the forefront of your consciousness. You will need to learn how to live this way. It will be an adjustment. Can you imagine how different your lives would be if you now lived on your planet in integrity and truth? You would not have to spend your precious energy trying to figure things out. Some of you are practicing this type of beingness now. You will still get roadblocks through from others who surprise you with their polarity. There we are, my friends. Thank you for being with me. I have to end it there. There was a little bit more in that message, but you've got the gist of it. Yet another lot who are, I think, also connected with the same program and plans as given us through Sheldon Nidal's Galactic Federation. So, I hope you found that all of interest, and I look forward to being with you again next week. So thank you for being with me, and I would say God bless you all.